Welcome to Ojibwe Stories, Daganununidai. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. Our guest today is Larry and Nick Smallwood, who grew up in Ajimu, the Lake Lena district of Mille Lacs. He has worked as a language instructor for the Minneapolis Public Schools, Neosheng School, the Leech Lake Tribal College, and the University of Minnesota Duluth. Since 1999, he has served as the Director of Language and Culture for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. Today, Larry talks about ongoing changes in Ojibwe culture, such as music, dance, and traditional regalia. I wanted to ask you about culture change, and how do you see culture as being different from when you were growing up?
Well, when I was growing up, I was raised in a traditional community, and every day was we did something pertaining to our culture. Everything we did was cultural, actually. We did our tobacco all the time, used tobacco all the time for every little thing. And then the elders that raised me had, of course, hung around with a lot of other elders, and people would come and visit, you know, and they would visit and talk about the culture. And I used to listen to them say things are going to be changing pretty soon because of the loss of languages that they were talking about. And this was back in the 50s. I see a lot of that happening. A lot of our people are starving for culture, the ones that were not really raised or lived on reservations. So I noticed when I was living in Minneapolis, a lot of our people I'm saying, our Anishinaabe people, our Ojibwes, I can say, were grasping things from here and here and from this culture and that culture and trying to mix them together. And I noticed that as I was getting into my 20s and everything. We have a way. We were given the ways, and nobody at that time took time to go back home or to seek out elders and ask them questions. This, I suppose, started around the 60s when they got away from a lot of that, and they started mixing up different ways, so to speak. And one of the things that I've noticed was when we go to different powwows, these local powwows and powwows, you know, around the Midwest here, is the singing. Each tribe had their way of singing and their beats. I've noticed that change came about starting, I suppose, around the 70s. You take us local Ojibwe people, I would say from around Mille Lacs, Lac-Couturé, St. Croix, Leech Lake, Fond du Lac, in that area. I remember way back then, the actual Ojibwe songs were pretty rapid beat and are singing. And now that's all changed in the 70s, in the late 70s. They've adopted the new way of singing, or another tribe's way of singing, by a much slower beat. That's one of the changes I've seen. Also the drums, there are a lot of them that have changed. Remember the old bass drums they used to have, you know, for good times and just general show powwows and stuff, they use that. And then they start getting into using actual hides from an elk or a steer or something like that. Those change. The drums are getting nicer and fancier, which is good. They got away from the old bass drums that we used to use. But the singing, too, it's always been our way. A Southern Ojibwe, as they like to call us, we never had women singers sit on a drum. They never did, as far back as the elders could remember. It was not that way. Women were important. They stood in the back or sat behind the actual singers, and they would sing the songs with the men. They would be called Shabwe Quig. Shabwe means the voice comes through. And that sounded really good. They still do that. There's still a lot of them that like the Jaboy, and it sounds really pretty. You know, they have some really good voices on some of our women. But for a woman to sit at a drum, that was a big no-no here, and it still is in our local culture here. It might be okay out west where, you know, whatever they do out there, that's not our business. But here locally in Minnesota and Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, I should say, it's not allowed. And I know there's a group of women now that that go around singing with hand drums, and I've seen that, and I've asked a couple of our elders over there, and they said, God, give me not seen we know, they should chigate. So, and then there was also 10, 12, 14 years ago, there was a women's group that wanted to set up, and they were not allowed because it's not in our culture. So there's a lot of changes I've noticed. Also, dancing has changed. You know, a lot of times our Ojibwe people, local Ojibwe, had black material, black velvet, and then they put their beadwork on them. They used to have leggings and vests and almost like a turban. And the Ojibwe's now have adopted a lot of different styles, and it's all good. It looks good and everything. It's all good, but I don't see hardly any of those old traditional Ojibwe style dance outfits anymore. You know, we've always had the jingle dress here, started around 1900, and I talked about that earlier. But that was it, and it was all fast dancing and really having a good time, you know. You know, we see other tribes too, you know, they look good, you know, and we used to be able to tell what tribe that individual was from that you see dancing by his outfit or her outfit, you know. It's all really nice, but a lot of it has changed.
You mentioned how the drums have changed since you were growing up and how 30, 40 years ago people used just bass drums because, you know, things were more social events like powwows. Since we have, you know, these more traditional drums with the deer hide and their living things, is there a certain way that singers and others that are around these drums are supposed to behave around these drums, even though they're not ceremonial drums per se?
Even though they're not ceremonial drums, you know, you should behave, you know. There's a certain protocol that goes to being a singer and sitting at a drum, whether it's a bass drum or whatever. You know, those songs that you're singing, those are gifts. Those are a lot of them come from dreams. A lot of them have been in their tribes for many years, you know. And so you should behave. There's a lot of times, you know, we have alcohol involved, and that's really frowned upon. The only drums that haven't changed are the actual Manadu Dewe Ganag, the ceremonial drums that we have back home here that never leave the community, where they actually have members. Those have remained the same since we've gotten them. But it's all good, you know. Singers should behave and, you know, be a role model to other little singers, you know. I was at a powwow this weekend over in Red Cliff, Wisconsin, and they had some young boys come out there and do some hand drum songs. And those little boys really are good singers.
Mm-hmm.
They have good role models. I know a few of them personally, and their role models are pretty good. Their father's really involved with them.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the kind of growth, rapid growth in the last, I guess, 10 years of hand drumming and round dances in Ojibwe country, if you could talk about that a little bit.
It was a big thing up north and a little out west over there, you know, and then kind of caught on around here. We've always had hand drums in our homes, and of course in some of our games, like the moccasin game, you know, a hand drum is required for some of the opposing team to sing, you know, and when they take turns, it's kind of to entertain and also to distract the other team when you hide that one item there. But we've always had hand drums, but now lately when they start coming around with competition powwows, you know, and they start having hand drum contests, which is good, it's all good, you know. And this is more of a chance also, too, to have individuals come out and sing against another individual, you know. It's a lot of fun. They have different songs, you know, and the Cree have theirs, you know, and we have ours here, and a lot of our guys on here will sing sidestep songs with their hand drums, which is perfectly normal around here. I mean, other people might think, hey, that's strange, he's singing a hand drum and he's singing a sidestep song, but it's all good.
Because we've been talking about the influence of different tribes on each other and things like that. Sometimes at powwows you see certain dancers going the opposite way of everybody else, and you know, maybe you'd want to just clarify for our listeners that have seen that and what that is.
Well, if you're Ojibwe, you go clockwise. Other tribes, sometimes the men will go counterclockwise, and there's a reason for that. But Ojibwe's go clockwise. Back in the 80s, I heard an elder get up and holler at some dancers that were going counterclockwise. And he got up and he hollered at them, "You men, you go clockwise. We know what tribe you're from. You're from here. Mm-hmm. You're local, so you go clockwise." He said, "If you want to go counterclockwise, there's a drum over here in one of the local reservations here where part of the ceremony they go counterclockwise. You go sit and participate in that drum ceremony if you want to dance counterclockwise." "No, it's always clockwise." And I mentioned that, too, a few times to some of our dancers. But, you know, again, they saw other tribes doing it, you know, so right. They think it looks cool, you know, and they go counterclockwise. But, no, the Ojibwe's go clockwise.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about traditional dancing and how important you think that is. And, you know, there's other styles of dancing, especially a contest powwow where there's bucks involved, but also even a traditional powwows. Other types of dancing, fancy dancing, tend to really whip up the crowd. And, you know, maybe younger dancers gravitate toward that more. But, you know, maybe talk a little about the importance of traditional dancing and why not only outfits, but just the style itself should be kept alive.
Well, as I know it, as I've learned it, dancers used to design their own outfits as they liked them. And some dancers, they're shown in a dream what their outfit should look like, or somebody instructs them in a dream what to do, but it's pretty much the individual's choice. Of course, our fancy dancers, that's more of an athletic dance, you know, it's really good to watch, fun to watch, you know, and even the girls' fancy. And the girls' fancy shawl dance came from out west in Montana, as I was told by another elder in Washington, D.C., when we were at the gathering over there. She said the old ladies used to sit around in the evening out there and got cool, so they would cover up in their shawls. And once in a while, they would go out there for an intertribal, just, you know, with their shawls on. Well, the younger girls saw that, and they started prettying up the shawls, and pretty soon they became fancy shawl dancers. And I didn't know that, but this elderly lady was presenting about out in D.C. So, and I thought it was pretty cool, so I know the origin of the fancy shawl dance and the jingle dress, and so far, always learning, you know, never too old to learn. But, yeah, you can design your own outfit the way you see fit, you know, and try to keep it local, you know what I mean?
Right.
I saw a guy dancing with the Oneida-style outfit this weekend. That's a completely different style, but he had a bustle on and all kinds of other things, and he was kind of mixing it, and we're sitting up at the announcer stand, you know, just commenting on that, you know. We didn't know how or where he got that style, you know what I mean?
Yep.
He was a good dancer, but, I mean, his outfit didn't match anything. And then we have dancers that just like to come out and dance, and they don't put any effort into their outfit, you know. They'll come out with a pair of tennis shoes, bells, right. And a T-shirt, and some of those people, I feel like, man, I wish I could work with this guy to give him an outfit. If I could, I wish I was rich, I'd buy this guy an outfit, because I see some good dancers out there, but, you know, nobody will help them make an outfit, you know, so
right.
they just have their bells and their tennis shoes and their vest maybe and a hanky or a choker and that's it, you know. But, you know, it's probably not their fault, you know.
Yeah.
But it's all about having fun anyway. Now, you go to your competition pals and these people put thousands of dollars into their outfits. And, they're always fun to watch, too.
So do you have any advice for people out there who are starting to dance and want to make sure they're following the traditional way to do things?
I don't have any suggestions for them. I mean, they should know, you know.
Right.
You know, I've seen some things that I like, too, you know, and I made it a point to go and get those things. I do have a traditional outfit, but I don't ever have a chance to go and dance, you know. I'm thinking about doing it this weekend. At least going out for some intertribals on Saturday night or something. I've had a new outfit now for about 9 years, and I haven't yet worn it. And a couple of weeks ago in Hinckley, I'm appointed to pick up the feathers around there, and a gentleman dropped his feather, and I went and picked it up to him and talked to him, you know, and respectfully, and then he appreciated it. And about 20 minutes later, he came up to me and he said, "I made something for myself." And he said, "I appreciate your appreciation of my culture, you know, and I appreciate yours, and I want to give this to you." And he gave me a full eagle bustle. I opened my big mouth and I said, "Oh, good, I'll wear this next year here, and I'll come through Grand Entry." So I got to do that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I wasn't expecting anything like that.
Yeah.
You know? So one thing, too, I want to talk about, you know, some people will drop an eagle feather and somebody will go pick it up, and they won't do anything. They'll just keep it or take it away from something. You know, we don't punish an eagle when he drops his feather from above. We don't punish him, nor do we chase that eagle around and try to stick it back in him.
Mm-hmm.
So that veteran who picks up that feather, It's his feather. You know, if you were to drop a feather and I picked it up, that's mine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If I want to give it to my buddy over there or somebody that needs a feather, that's my right to do that. Or if I want to give it back to you, that's my right. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But again, if I took it away from you and gave it to somebody else, I'm kind of punishing you. And we don't punish an eagle for dropping his feather.
Mm-hmm.
We talk for it. We encourage you to make sure it's fastened on properly, and that's the way we do it. Other tribes have a different way of handling dropped feathers. Some of them will adopt the ways of the people out west, and they'll have veterans dance around and pick it up and do all that. And when I announce at powwows, too, I always ask them that, how do you guys handle dropped feathers here? Or how do you guys handle whistleblowing here?
Mm-hmm.
As an announcer, I got to know that. You know, so if something happens, then I can announce it. That's one thing, too, about MCs. I MC a lot of places locally and out east, and I am an employee of that tribe that asked me to come out and MC for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to listen to them. The committee tells me what to do.
Hmm.
You know, I can't go over there and tell them what to do and try to run things the way I see it. No, it's not my job. My job is to work for that tribe or that reservation and announce for the committee what
right.
the committee says. I say to the people and the dancers and singers.
Is that difficult in places, and I don't want to get you in hot water here, but is that more difficult if, say, you get hired further east where maybe they don't have as much of a rich tradition and a vibrant tradition like we have here, and especially, you know, in a place like Mille Lacs, where maybe they need a little bit of, I don't want to say instruction, but, well, maybe I do want to say instruction. Do they give you that leverage, or...
Usually there's a spiritual advisor, you know, sitting there, and I'll usually ask him, how do you guys do this, or, you know, what's the protocol for this? Once in a while, I'll see something that's simply not the way we do things. You know, I can't say anything.
Right.
You know, I want to, but I bite my lip. There are a few things there that I see, you know, like a woman or father dancing with their child that's forbidden. You know, when you get a gift out there in that power circle and you dance for that gift and you hold it up, that's the same thing you're doing with your child. When you're dancing, you hold your child up there. You're offering your child. That's why we're very strict on that.
You mean as far as like a baby?
Yeah, right. Any child, you can't go out there and carry a child around.
Right, yep.
Another time I saw a girl on YouTube dirty dancing with her jingle dress on. Now, if I'd have been there at that place, and me coming from where the jingle dress came from, I would have went over there and hollered at her.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have hollered at her dad and mother if they would have came over there and stuck up for her. That's not the way to have a jingle dress. Those are spiritual dresses.
Do you have any suggestions for our non-native listeners about what they should get out? I mean, if you know, I encounter this teaching where people are like, there's a powwow around where I live or where my parents have a cabin, say, and I wanted to go to it, but I didn't quite know what to do. You know, and I think a lot of non-natives have that kind of reaction. We could talk about that a little bit. And
when I announce somewhere, I usually give little teachings out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the crowd and see who's out there, and if I see a whole lot of non-natives out there, then I will make it a point to talk about some of the different styles or some of the different regalia or whatever. You know, I'll mention that, kind of educate people. You know, otherwise they think we're just a bunch of schnobs out there dancing and hollering and doing whatnot. But, you know, so I kind of educate if I can, you know.
So is there any, like, kind of tips for our non-native listeners if they come to a powwow for the first time they should look for, kind of, to make their experience better?
I'll just sit and watch and observe, and that's about it. I can't give them any instructions, really. just make sure if you're going to take a picture of somebody, that you go ask that dancer, you know, if you can take his picture, you know, and it's kind of an insult sometimes to ask somebody, but can I take your picture, or so... Make sure they ask the dancer if they can take a picture. You know? I don't know. Some people say, you know, no pictures here, no pictures allowed here, you know. And I what the heck? I looked in history books and all kinds of pictures of things that are going on, so I don't know what's going on. I don't, some people a long time ago knew their pictures being taken, or or if they didn't, or what, you know.
It almost seems like that's kind of a bigger issue, I feel like, in the Southwest. Some of those Pueblo communities, there's signs that say no picture taking,
right.
You know, and probably just their history of just their interaction with non-natives where people come and that's what they want to do for whatever reason.
Right. Now, over in Mille Lacs, at their annual traditional powwow there that they have in August, we have our ceremonial drum there out in the open, but that's there for people to put tobacco on and for safety of the people that are coming over to visit. That's why we have that ceremonial drum there. That you do not take pictures of. You know, one of the reasons for some hobbyist or somebody will come along and try to duplicate it or try to learn from it somehow or something. So we said no pictures of that drum. You know.
This is Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunida, a program of Ojibwe culture. Our guest today is Larry Amick Smallwood, a language instructor at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He is also the Director of Language and Culture for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and is a contributing voice to the Ojibwe People's Dictionary, an online resource created by the University of Minnesota. Today we're talking about powwows, and an upcoming powwow in our area is the Lacoutere Honor the Earth powwow in Hayward, Wisconsin. This weekend, July 19th through the 21st, the powwow grounds are located 11 miles south of Hayward on Trepanier Road. The Honor the Earth powwow will have grand entries Friday, July 19th at 7 p.m., Saturday at 1 and 7 p.m., and on Sunday at 1 p.m. The Lacoutere Honor the Earth powwow is in Hayward, Wisconsin, July 19th to 21st. For more information, call 715-634-1442. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what's unique about the Mille Lacs community. You know, I think other Ojibwe communities, we look at Mille Lacs and we see that, you know, historically, but especially right now, there's a lot of language and culture that remains, and some of our other communities don't have that as much. What makes Mille Lacs unique, at least in Minnesota, Wisconsin?
To me, what makes Mille Lacs unique is our ceremonial drums and Arbor Day ceremonies. See, we've never gone underground or hid anything, even when we were supposedly not allowed to do these things. We didn't listen. People over there were strong. You know, we're going to keep on using our ceremonial drums. We're going to keep on doing bidet, and that's it. So they did. You know, one time we were laughed at, the Mille Lacs band was, because we were a little pitiful reservation along 169 and also up in East Lake and Ojibwe, you know. Well, you know, we had some pretty strong leaders back then that were bound determined to make it a better community, and they did. And then, you know, we have the two big casinos, and the government doesn't give all the money that we make to each individual person. I mean, we've got community development going on. I mean, you've seen our schools, our houses, our highways, our different programs, you know, that we have, and that's good. And then we get a little bit what's left over each month to help us out. And I like it that way. You know, let's make our community look good. Let's get all the services for these people, and we can worry about money later. And the language, it's always been part of my life. It's always been number one. But it's dwindling. We lost a lot of elders between 2000 and 2013. I mean, we just lost another first speaker here last week, the former chief executive, Marge Anderson. Now, she was a traditional lady, spoke her language, and now she's gone, so that's one less speaker we have now. In the late 90s, there were probably 200 people that spoke the language still, and now that's way less than 100. But we have young people that are learning. They have to learn because of all our ceremonies that we have, you know. So,
and do you feel like it's a case where it's not just your own community, but other communities in Minnesota and Wisconsin kind of almost look to Mille Lacs for that?
I don't know if they look to Mille Lacs, but, man, there are a lot of young people learning the language. I mean, you take LCO, you got the Wadukadong in school. You've got people just dedicated to the language. Also over in Leech Lake, Fond du Lac, all these young people, and it makes me really glad that they're doing that. I don't know, I like speaking Ojibwe to those students, and they're picking it up, and I'll not say they're saying this wrong. If they say something to me and it's wrong, I'll just say I'll repeat it, but I'll repeat it the correct way, you know, make them feel good. They're learning, you know. I will never laugh at anybody or really criticize anybody that's trying to learn their language. You know, I might smile. Maybe sometimes I'll smile out loud. No, I'm just kidding.
I was wondering if you could give a quick review of what we talked about today in Ojibwe.
I am a Anushku and Gagweja Migu ma to the Bajam with Togwango base and Nungig. Kawandesh, oh yeah, and we pop in the Dwasi, no yeah, gave us in Dung and the Skave, but Khan get us at Twab and Noma, Paper Khan get us at Chigay Seaman, Gown and the Argon with Dwasi, no, Chaya, guys get Kunuma, gave in the only Donna Sun Marja, who was a shame, Paper Khan it. Gegen diese Twaben mit der Gouverdikea an den Kargei Kaisige Knurma Oaden und get Chöi Amag und get das Imag Mekea is get Knurma Agea Mekea is jungin dem Agea an Asna Gawin Gawin Gehne Weg Chige Kende Muka Ado Sien Ja, und du is it Chige Sien Eo Tegu das in dem Anu Kuhai Abend dem Anu Beba Kanak and Skigi and go Nega Mujig Mnango Quirk Nagamuad Ma we have a jaw and Terry Gun and get this ma Gawika Gawika is you ever saloon here, may as I know that's as good as you are and is it Chigi on and on a Sanabe Bugadan no Quirk and more than a month a minute Terry Gunning the Nagamud Gawin is we ever saloon here. Gawin Gay Kinagay going Kansas in. The Shago and the Baja Minikama, Ko, Gigwajami Watama, and Snagawin, and we pop under the last in the way of bees, and then the Skigil and the shame when now Jesus guys in the cars and me guys at happening. I go, I know we go Gigi Kino Magi, Gigos to week out there, and go to Bachana, and he goes and he calls a kid, Gigi, 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 the wind of Mordoa Gaon Keag is to get seeming ill, a hog, you know. Me Keag as a canoe, but would get any. Can I get in a gazman gain, Shanabi, and can I get away quicker to when the guy could again? Can I go away as a chigayo? When I go Kaya, say my bugger the dragon, and the bugger the Namua gave it one girl. Want a towel to play with Jake to read your cargo with you, okay, gave it one. And the scale we didn't get me to do it over, there's a 12 and a 9, he's been. Can I go Chayag and the Dragon Awat? Boots we do Kongwa and go. We're skewed to blame with Jig. Gay go gay, Bapiakin, or skewed to blame with. You know, we do Kawa, he's been away and said a Tawidma. We do Kawa Darning good. We're skewed to blame with Jig. Kigga, we do Kagunanik, this gig in the wind, good thing. May your mom in a case, you got a gig into that. Me grits.
That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank our guest, Larry Amick Smallwood, for sharing his stories with us. This is Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunidada. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. To listen again to past episodes of Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunidada, visit the KUMD website at kumd.org and click on Audio Archives. Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunidada, is produced in cooperation with KUMD and the Department of American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota Duluth, with funding provided in part by a UMD Strategic Initiative grant from the Chancellor's Office of UMD, and by N.A. Gekane Dasoyam, the Center for Indigenous Knowledge and Language Revitalization at the University of Minnesota Duluth.